Hey y'all, welcome to class. This is Light Homework, a show where we tell you all the things they are no longer allowed to teach in school. Like, you know, Black history and social emotional learning. I'm Tori Williams Douglas. I'm an anti-racism educator who focuses on nervous system responses. And this week, super excited, we are talking to musician, author, speaker, recovering activist, Andre Henry, fan fave, talking about practical skills for developing emotional resilience in order to survive in a world that is ruled by capitalism and destructive competition. Like most of us doing anti-racism work, Andre and I have spent the last couple of years trying to figure out how to recover from activism burnout. Turns out activists usually burn out after a couple of years. That sucks. Okay, you can find links to all of Andre's work in the show notes as well as sources for this episode. Content warning before we start, this episode contains references to suicide and diets. If you are experiencing a mental health crisis in the US or Canada, you can dial 988 to get support. That's 988. There's no long 800 number anymore, it's just 988. Okay, let's get started. Andre, thank you so much for agreeing to be on White Homework again. Love having you here. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me again.
Good. I'm so glad to hear it. So you and I had been talking about what to talk about. So for this episode, and you told me that like you'd really been focusing on resilience in your music, in your kind of personal life and research and reading and study and in your own health. And so I thought that like that is just a brilliant thing to talk about. I think especially for Black folks, especially for people of color, it's really important.
Yeah.
It's really important. And it is, we were not intended to be the recipients of the air quotes care from like mental health care professionals. And so we weren't really factored into the development of those things, except to prove white supremacy again, your quotes. Like that was our inclusion, was to prove that we were inferior. So, you know, there are good reasons to be skeptical of mental health care as an industry because of the way that it causes harm. And I think that we also have to have tools to build resilience as real people who live in the real world, because I don't think you can survive at this point without it.
Yeah, for sure. I was, how do you say, hostile to the idea of resilience, you know, when I got really active against racial injustice. I'm thinking of myself as a recovering activist these days. I don't think that I want to be an activist anymore. I definitely want to be a part of seeing change in the world and make an impact. So, but I remember, and these are related, because I remember my idea of what it meant to be on the side of justice and trying to create change was martyrdom.
Yep.
Right. Like, and I mean, it probably has something to do with, you know, worshiping a martyr for most of my life. Right. Like, you know,
that's the framework that we're handed in that context. You know,
like those things are probably definitely related.
Yeah, I'm sure.
You know, so that was my idea of being a freedom fighter, you know, was martyrdom. And I think that I thought it had to hurt to try to change the world. Not just that it's going to hurt, but I believed that it had to hurt somewhat. And so like I kind of deprived myself in the early days of even just like having a sense of humor about what I was doing. You know, I was doing all this like performance art, like, lugging a 100-pound boulder around Los Angeles, or wearing a suit with all the names of those who've been slain by the police in these public ways on my body. And I remember someone said, "You look nice today," while I'm in this suit with all the names all written all over me. And I was like, don't tell me that, you know, which as I say it, I'm like, that's an appropriate response for me, you know.
Right.
But,
yeah.
But it wasn't the only response I could have had. I also could have said, thank you. Right. Like I could have just been like, yeah, thanks, you know, for people who are missing the point. And I don't think that it was bad for me to do. I don't think I was wrong, but I do think that I was adding to my suffering, you know, because the way that I felt was Philando Castile is dead. Alton Sterling is dead. Their families are grieving.
Yeah.
We are living through an extension of Jim Crow, which is, you know, definitely how I understood policing, the prison industrial complex. You know, it's the new Jim Crow. So what do you mean I look nice today with all these names of the dead all over my body, you know? But I have since, okay, I want to say more about that. I have since recognized that I think that that is a pervasive attitude of people who consider themselves to be woke on the side of justice. It's not everybody, but if you stay committed to wanting to be a part of the social transformation that has to happen in our society, then you do it long enough, you live long enough to realize that like that attitude of don't even fucking compliment me today is not very sustainable, because it's kind of a it's not it's a drain on your own resources and energy. So I was burnt out. I was burnt out like a year into being active. You know, they say that most activists, there's actually been some studies on this, most activists don't last more than 2 years. You know, and on the long end, 6 years, you know, but that's still kind of a short time span, especially if you think in terms of folks who were activists, you know, like Dr. King and others who, you know, they were activists till they were died. I mean, till they died. So I see this as a pervasive thing. I'm thinking of people who say things like, you know, don't call me resilient, don't ask me to be resilient. I want you to change the structures that require me to be resilient. I have felt that way. I have know I've said something to the effect, if not those exact words. So in those ways, I feel like, yeah, I was kind of hostile to the idea. That was how I felt, was I felt like it was my calling to display the grief that Black people were experiencing in the Black Lives Matter era. And I didn't understand the toll that it was taking on me, and I didn't believe that I should give my attention to the toll that that took on me. And now I feel very differently about that attitude, where like I understand it, but now a PTSD diagnosis later, health problems later, anxiety and depression later, that is directly related to the political situation of Black people. I understand the folks who say, like, don't ask me to be resilient, like change the conditions that require my resilience. But I'm also like, yeah, but you don't need some of that. You're gonna need some of that. For many reasons, the revolution is not happening tomorrow, you know. So in the meantime, you know, and then also, even if there were no need to deal with social oppression, you would still need to be resilient, because that's what animals have to do, you know, like. When you remember that we are animals, we're part of the animal kingdom, which is hard to keep track of since we are the apex predators. But when you remember that and you put yourself in that group again, you remember like all the other animals, they gotta dodge, you know, getting eaten or facing injury or sickness in the wild. Not all the time, not all the time, but they do. And that's the difference between us, is that we actually end up in that position of stress, I think, a lot more than the average animal, because we put each other through more. You know, like a gazelle doesn't have to run from a lion 24 hours a day, like nonstop. You know, it happens, you know, somewhat regularly, but not all the time. But we are being inundated by these assaults on our mental well-being, our sense of safety, our dignity. All these things all the time. So that's why I feel differently about it. Now it's become like the center of my life, of like, how do I live well under present conditions while doing my part to try to change them? And making the pursuit of well-being, like that be like the center of my life and the work that I do.
Which is wild because it's such a complete reframe. I loved that you started out by pointing out that it's like the framework that we were given originally was martyrdom, and that was seen as very like honorable, right? And just, and that was how you were supposed to live your life. That's, I mean, I think especially for people of color in like majority white churches or like majority evangelical spaces, that's the expectation of you, right? Is that you just do the things. You're not the one who's complaining. It's like you're the first person to get asked to do the work, right? And so changing from that mindset of martyrdom to, okay, what does it look like to have resilience over the long term is like really profound, honestly, because it's not just a rejection of like, in order to make a difference, in order to be an activist or whatever language we're using, we have to be like burned out all the time. It's also kind of a rejection of the way that capitalism works, which also says you have to be burned out all of the time. And that's like the intent, right? It's like, what do you do for a living? Like, what do you do to earn your keep around here? right? Is like the framing that we're given. So, in that process, like what did that look like for you in terms of the things that you were kind of doing, I guess, day to day, the ways that you chose to think about things differently, like and what impact did that has that had so far, right? Because I know you're we're still in the process. We're always in the process of like caring for ourselves.
I definitely consider myself a like on a journey, right? Of well-being. And part of that is like what you name around capitalism. Like when I, you ever watch Black Mirror?
A few episodes.
There's the one where everyone like lives in these little pods and they all go to work every day by like pedaling on these exercise bikes, right? And they can earn points, right? And this one guy wants, like, he's like, this is messed up. I want to change this. I don't want to live in a world like this, right? But and the only way out is to get famous on this basically America's Got Talent kind of show, right? And he gets on the show, he holds up a piece of glass to his neck and he says his piece, and it's so disruptive, you know, like it stops the show, it interrupts what usually happens. But the end result of that episode is that that just becomes his thing. Like he has a TV show. He has a TV show where he holds a piece of glass to his neck and he speaks his mind, right? And I have thought about that episode so often when I think about the many of us that became that we started making content to help educate people around racial justice and social transformation. And then you just see the way that our capitalist common sense, the capitalist arrangement of the world, takes even that and just makes another commodity out of it, you know? And so, like, you just have a bunch of people consuming anti-racist entertainment, you know? And that really discouraged me, you know? It discouraged me to, you know, involve myself in on the ground, you know, street actions and community organizing and studying revolutions, and to find out like how many people are in these crowds and or leading crowds, you know, that really are just trying to platform themselves. Like they're trying to get the next book deal. They want to have the megaphone. Okay, sidebar, but totally related. An example really is like the other day, there's this huge action in California, where I live. I'm not going to say exactly where, because if I say where it was in California, then people will know who it was. But anyway, a bunch of people came out for this action. The lead organizer, whose mom was there apparently making a scene, left the protest while it was happening and went to IHOP. And like just like while the event that they organized is going on, they're just at IHOP eating, you know, for 2 hours, right? And it's like when they came back. And my friend is the one relaying this to me. They were like, yeah, you know, when you're a star, they're haters, you know? And like my friend, obviously, you know, I have quality friends. So my friends, I call them out for saying that on the spot. But I'm like, there is that kind of attitude that pervades this space where people just see it as another path to achieve the American dream. Super discouraging for me. And it kind of knocked me out for a bit. So all the infighting, all the toxic behavior that goes on, you know, made me say, like, I don't know if I want to be a part of this. Like, it was wearing on me to be a part of the movement, which actually is science. You know, like
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm reading this book called Weathering that talks about how, like, the stress of living in an unjust society, you know, what it does to our body cells, how it wears us down on the inside, and how fighting the problems also does that too. Trying to achieve the American dream, the hustle for the American dream, it weathers you. Fighting against the structures weathers you. Living under the structures weathers you, right? I started really feeling that because I live with depression. My PTSD diagnosis came from movement work. And so I reached a point where I realized that if I didn't do something, I was probably going to die a death of despair. Like I had people in my life that just expected that one day they're going to get a call that like Andre's not here anymore. They just felt like that was inevitable, and I also felt that way too. I was like deep down, like if someone said, "Do you have a suspicion about how you'll die?" I'm like, "Yeah, I'm going to do it." one day. And so I realized that like I had to do something. It's funny because I posted something about like what my life is about months ago on Instagram about like just making it to tomorrow and making tomorrow better. Like that's what my life is about. And they're like, wow, the clarity of your life. And I'm like, yeah, you go to the ER enough times and you get very clear about your life, and what your life is about. Because in the ER, they give you this form to fill out when they're leaving to create a safety plan. And one of the questions on the safety plan is, what is worth waking up for tomorrow? I found my way back to the question, right? What is worth waking up for tomorrow? And when I first filled that out, I didn't even know, I grew up evangelical, so I feel like I have to have a very profound and deep, meaningful reason, like reason to wake up tomorrow. I feel like I have to put something profound here. And a part of me did feel like the thing that I can wake up for tomorrow or every day is telling the world it doesn't have to be this way, right? Telling people about the collective power that we have to change the world. And something about that also felt untrue. Like it was true that that is a driving force in my life. It is something that I love doing. But it didn't feel like really. Like, I mean, that's partly why I'm here in the ER in the first place. Let's be real, like that's partly how I got here, So in that moment, I said, the thing that's worth waking up for in the morning is making music. And I remember I was staying with my aunt in Redondo Beach. Oh man, I'm getting choked up thinking about this because literally, like, I would start recording a song, I would start producing a song in her kitchen. So like a lot of songs that I produced that I released last year in 2023, I produced in my aunt's kitchen in Redondo Beach. And I would literally go to bed and the curiosity of, well, what will happen if I try this new plugin that I just bought? Or how would it sound if I tried this sound or if I sang it that way? Like that was what got me out of bed the next day for several weeks, was just finishing the song. And it didn't feel like the capitalistic grind culture, like, like we gotta make this music, we gotta make this money or whatever. It was just something very simple, something very small, right? And I think that that is where my resilience journey began. In hindsight, because I've been reading about resilience for myself and learning about resilience, is that there are two things that happened that I can identify while I'm at it. I'll just define resilience for myself. It's a particular set of skills, right? So it's like, it's not just like this innate characteristic that people have, which is what I thought of before, and this is how we usually talk about it, is that like resilience gets lumped in with these words like strong and tough and these things that you really think of as innate qualities. Like a rock is tough, it's strong, right? A brick is that way, like those kinds of things. But I've since learned and think of, right? Or I agree with the school of thought, I should say, that resilience is more about having this toolbox that you can use to adapt, to cope with life, to find and maintain a sense of well-being. And there were two things happening in that. One is purpose. It wasn't a very deep and profound purpose. I want to hear that. I want to hear how that song's done when it, how that song sounds when it's done. Like that was my reason for getting up in the morning. And then while doing it, experiencing a state of flow, which is really good for your brain to be in this space where it's like, I am not thinking about how bleak the world is. I am not thinking about the powers and systems and structures that don't believe in my dignity and want to withhold it from me on some level. I'm not thinking about the two-faced, hypocritical, clout-seeking activists that threaten my life and try to ruin my reputation. I am just in this moment. I'm just in this moment. My full attention, time doesn't even exist in this moment. It's just me making this piece of art. And so I began to like discover like disciplines like that of like reading about well-being. Like I started reading about well-being, reading people like Rick Hansen. There's a couple other books. There's one called Black Fatigue, another called Living While Black by these folks who work either as practitioner, mental health practitioners or work in the health field or whatever. And I began to see that like you can build these skills, right? Like of getting into flow, or ideas that, or I'm sorry, skills of like defining like what is your life about, your purpose, all that kind of stuff. Self-compassion and gratitude and mindfulness and all these things. And so like you can literally say like these things are good for you. They're good for that sense of well-being. They help us adapt. They help us to cope. They help us to keep going. They help us to ha have a sense of well-being, even when things are not perfect, which they'll never be perfect. And you can grow these skills. So in the reading of doing these things, I wanted to emphasize practice. I don't want to just know about resilience and what smart people say about resilience and be able to repeat it. Because that's another thing is like we think that we know things because we can repeat what other people said about them, you know?
Oh, wow.
You
Yeah.
know?
Yeah.
For instance, I have the Greater Good Toolkit. You can actually kind of see it on the table behind me next to the lamp. There's that
Yeah.
little box with the blue top. There's the Greater Good Toolkit from the Greater Good Science Center. You know, I'm so grateful for them and their work because what they do is they specialize in these like science-based practices for well-being. And so inside that box are like all like I think there's 30 something like colorful cards, and each one has a practice on it. There's like a card for like writing a letter to someone, you know, or taking an awe walk, you know, and things like that. And so those are the things I started trying to practice, like finding practice-based tools to help me learn about resilience that I can do. And trying not to just take information and repost it on social media. I think that that
Yeah.
is like the biggest temptation in this world that is obsessed with content making and all and platforming, that it's like, okay, what I'm not going to do is immediately start getting on social media and saying, what you need to know about self-compassion, you know, as though I'm a neuroscientist or a psychologist or something. Like, no, this is for me, you know.
Yeah.
And one more thing I'll say about that is like a part of my process and my journey is incorporating it into my music. I think that one of the most stressful things I ever did was try to be a leader, you know, in the fight for racial justice. I wanted to do my part, you know, but I think that another part of me was I was at least willing to lead, and I did try. And I was like, I don't want to do what I did with nonviolent struggle, which is learn everything that I can and then try to translate that information for people who won't do the reading. I was like, no, I want to incorporate this in a personal way and bring it into my creative expression, you know, and to sing about it, share. That's the thing, is to share about it rather than try to teach.
That makes so much sense. Would you be, you're totally welcome to say no. Would you be willing to share some of the things that you do personally to like care for yourself and
Sure.
your mental health and your nervous system?
Yeah, absolutely. So here's one thing that I learned from Rick Hansen's work, which I really do appreciate Rick Hansen so much. He's like the lead fellow at the Greater Good Science Center, but he also has a class, he has a course called the Foundations of Well-being. And for those listening, like if this is interesting to you, it goes, so he identifies 12 resilience skills, and each module is about that skill. Okay, so one thing I think that it's the learning skill. So he lists learning as a resilience skill, and he's like, we had him on my podcast, and when I asked him about learning, he just lit up. Like he's like, this is the most important resilience skill.
That
Because
is
if
so fascinating
he was
when you
like,
think
it,
about like authoritarianism.
right? Like he's like, if you get this, then you can get them all. And so what it's linked to is, or what learning is linked to in this context is knowing what your basic needs are, right? And so like he identifies the base your basic needs as safety, satisfaction, and connection. And you know, like this is all based on, you know, the different parts of the brain, those three parts. Everyone has different words, right, for these three the three layers of the brain that those are connected to, right? So for me to take care of myself now, sometimes I first off is this emotional awareness, which I've never really had a problem with. I've always been pretty emotionally aware of what I'm experiencing emotionally. But what I wasn't always aware of is that sometimes those emotions are connected to certain needs. Like sometimes you feel anxious or depressed or, angry or lonely or whatever, and it's correlated to one of those basic needs. So if I'm feeling lonely, I'm feeling sad because I'm lonely. Well, that's an obvious one. That basic need of connection is somehow not being met, right? So now what do I need to do? How can I take care? How can I care for myself in that specific way? And for me, like that might be like calling a family member, because like me and my dad are close. So I might call my dad, right? Or I might reach out to a friend or something like that. I'm trying to think again. One of the biggest lessons for me on this journey has been about self-compassion. I think my therapist started there and I was like, what does this have to do with like the fact that I'm stressed out about white supremacy and anti-blackness, right? Like, I'm like, what are we doing here? But now I've come to understand, like, it's one of the most valuable things for me these days because for so many reasons, right? Some of those reasons are has to do with the inner advocate, right? Like everyone talks about your inner critic, right? But what about like the voice inside of you that supports you? Now you might have to create that voice, but it can be there. And so once I started thinking of, here's what really got me like thinking about this. That learning skill that Rick Hansen talks about is literally about like installing resilient skills in your brain, like making them characteristics by practicing them. And so with self-compassion, what he asked us to do in this class and in the book as well, Resilient, is to think of a time where someone has shown you compassion and get in touch with what that feels like in your body. Now, see if you can turn that feeling toward yourself, right? While you're doing that. Whenever you're experiencing that, linger in it for a few more seconds. Take a deep breath and linger in it for like 5 more seconds, something like that kind of stuff. Learning to cultivate that feeling in your body. Okay, so then there was a question about like, when have you shown someone compassion? And same thing, showing it to yourself. Well, just a couple of weeks before I read that, I had a friend who was deeply, depressed. And we were concerned that like she was going to harm herself because she'd been telling us she was going to harm herself. And after days of spending time with her, it didn't seem like it was working or doing anything. Like she was still kind of determined to do so. And I made a really hard decision to call call 911 for her to get help. I didn't want to call 911. I want for us to have something better than 911 to call. But if the choices are between, my friend harming herself and her being, somewhere where she's safe, then that's what I chose. Come to find out, the facility that she was taken to was actually abusing her. Because I went there every single day at visiting hours to talk to her. And she would tell me what's going on, them giving her medication that she knows that her psychiatrist told her that, has already taken her off of, not giving her food that she can eat because she has a specific diet, kind of reprimanding her. And I even heard one of the workers there talk to her as though she had done something wrong to end up there. Like, so like this criminality that exists, the relationship between that, which, we talked about before we started recording, there is a kind of criminalization that is there in the mental health. What do you want to call it? Our mental health institutions, our mental health system. So this worker is talking to her as though she did something wrong to end up there. All right, so first off, I'm showing up for her every day. We're talking to her, but they're not giving her stuff she can eat, so she's not eating well. So now I'm going to the grocery store and finding whatever I can stuff in my clothes to sneak into this facility for her, And by the end, it's like, I'm talking to higher ups there. And by the end of it, I'm like, listen, if I need to handcuff myself to the door of this mental health facility, like to bring attention here, like I will do that, So now I'm sitting here with this question from this book about think about a time when you've shown someone compassion. Yeah, I'm thinking of what I just described to you. And this book is asking me, see if you can turn that energy toward yourself. And I had to confront the question of like, how often does the Andre that's willing to sneak food into a mental health facility for his friends protest, handcuff himself to a door for his friends if necessary, show up every day for visiting hours. How often does that Andre show up for Andre?
Yeah.
And I couldn't really answer that question. I couldn't think of, times where like I have that thing, that fire that I have when it's like maybe it's a friend. Sometimes it's people I don't even know. Like I didn't know George Floyd.
Right.
I didn't know George Floyd. But look how I spent the summer of 2020. No, I know that like it wasn't just personal what happened to George Floyd. Like it's because it's a shared interest, but still, like, how often does that Andre show up for Andre? So I try to really keep in touch with that voice, like, and cultivate that. Sometimes I even like imagine, like I will use my imagination to imagine that the Andre that shows up on the street and it doesn't have to be this way t-shirt is showing up for me. And I don't know if that sounds like a practice for people, but it really is something that I have intentionally had to do. And it is a way that I take care of myself, I think, because I do have that inner critic voice. And then I literally will intentionally, ask myself, like, how would I talk to someone else about this? When I'm judging myself, when I'm being critical about myself, because I don't talk to other people that way. I don't shame other people. I don't come down hard on them for the most part, unless you're
Yeah.
like Donald Trump or something, like
Right, exactly.
I'm writing an article about you. But like another thing for me is around like my physical health. When I'm in my routine, I get up and the first thing that I do in the morning is I take like a walk. Like just around the block, get some sunlight in my eyes,
Yep.
come back, get ready for the day, shower, all that kind of stuff. I'm exercising more. I set a bedtime for myself, and these are things that I think that sometimes when we're talking to people who care about social justice, like there's this disconnect, there's this dehumanizing thing that we do to ourselves and to other people involved in it, where it's like we act like these things don't matter. But vitality is also a resilience skill, or tending to it, right? And so like if you are not tending to the vitality of your body, or not only are you going to be out of touch with that sense of well-being, you're not going to be of much use to the struggle for a better world.
Right.
Cuz like
Yeah, absolutely.
you're sleeping on your stomach and your shoulder's fucked up now, and like you're staying up late, you're not drinking water, all that kind of stuff. It's like you can't do that much work in that condition, not for
Right.
long,
Right.
So it's like for me, like taking care of my actual body is like the ground floor. So now what I tell people is that like well-being is first off what we're fighting for. Like we want a world where people can be well. It's
Yes.
also the basis of your ability to fight, for
Yes.
that world. So those are some ways that I'm trying to take to care of myself. Also my eating, like I'm not dieting, but I am being more careful. Like I'm in this program called Noom, that maybe it is a little problematic, I don't know. But what I do know is that it helps me think, it helps me be more mindful about the amount of green stuff that I'm eating, or ingesting, right? So
Right.
And the last thing I'll say is mindfulness has become a lot more, and I think I want a different word for this, but that's the word that
Totally.
like is the word that came like that out like in my reading that's how they were defining it. But I think I want a different word because it's not like it's not Buddhist meditation, right? But it
Right.
is, but there is, well, mindfulness is a part of self-compassion if you're reading from Kristen Neff, right? Like who's like the name for self-compassion these days, but for me it was just the idea of attention management, which is literally the word, the phrase that came up in my reading was attention management. And I found that phrase to be so helpful for me because of something that I do plan to write about, which is like how toxic some of the ideas that we have are about being woke. Because I grew up in Black America, I heard the phrase stay woke here and there growing up. And what's funny about that is that like usually it was Black people making fun of other Black people. It was like almost said in jest, always kind of said in jest, right? It's
Right.
like because let's be real, like Most colonized people are not radicalized people. You know, like most colonized people, you know, I maybe I shouldn't say most, but a good deal of colonized people just want to, they just want to be a part of the colonizer society. Like they're just like,
Right.
I don't want to uproot the thing. I just want to be able to participate in the fruits of my labor, right? Even Baldwin writes like this when in Nate's Notes of a Native Son, like point being that like when I heard the phrase stay woke usually growing up, it was like someone like we're like saying this person's a conspiracy brother. Like they're like they're way too hyped up about the idea that you know what the government is doing, the government can't be trusted, da, da, da. Now we agree with you, we just don't talk about it all the time, right? That's how I heard about it. But then like after 2014, when white Americans discovered that we even said that term, woke started transforming into just like this negative outlook, like a generally negative outlook. Everything is being read through the lens of like the least charitable, the least generous interpretations that we can make of what's happening in the world around us and other people. That's been my vantage point on it. And so now when I look at that though, with what I'm learning about resilience, is that our brains latch on to negative information in order to protect us from harm, right?
Right. Yep.
Which complicates this, right? Where it's like, yes, the United States was founded on genocide, enslavement, land theft, exploitation. That is true. And the ground that you walk on, the products that you consume, all those things, you're going to find some kind of corruption in the supply chain, in the production of those products, most of the time, right? Because
Right.
that is the world that we live in. Now, I don't think that we should become numb to it, excuse it, you know, and make it just like you know, the like it's nothing, right? At the same time, you can fall into this like way of looking at the world as though you're in the real world in the Matrix, right? You know, the scorched sky, the slop to eat for lunch, the hand-woven clothes, you know what I mean? And
Right.
that is a miserable way to live. And so I had to ask myself, like, are you woke or is that just the negativity bias speaking, right? Of your brain. The other thing is that like having that lens, that whatever your social justice lens is not necessarily the same thing as having perspective. It can give you more perspective. It can widen the frame. We should have the frame wide enough to where we can see that, like Aimé Césaire says, Western civilization is unjustifiable, right? Like
It just is.
it just is. It's
Yeah.
unjustifiable. You know, we're here and I enjoy some things about living in the heart of the empire, you know. Like there are some things that I enjoy about that and would be hard to adjust living without. But you can't justify building it. Like there's way too much violence and corruption in doing it, you know. And
Yeah.
there were already civilizations here and in Africa. And like there's no justifying it, right?
Right.
Frame should be wide enough for that. But what happens is like what I see are these habits of like, and these are habits that I participated in. I'm questioning the fact that I have done this, is making exact correlations between, like, let's say, our time and like slavery, right? Like, there are dynamics of the foundations of racial capitalism that endure today, right?
Yes.
Obviously, but we're not living in the, you know what I mean? Like it's
Yeah.
not the same, right?
Right.
And there are many reasons why it's important to do that. One is just the fact of if we say that racism evolves, then we have to keep track of the evolution so we know how to fight it. That's one, you know. So like we need to know like the difference between fighting chattel slavery capitalism and neoliberal capitalism in the 21st century, right?
Right.
But there's also another part of that where it's like you're adding to your suffering mentally and emotionally by telling yourself, I don't know, by reading everything as an instance of anti-Black oppression. And it's not oppression that I want to, it's like everything is a microaggression, everything is an instance of racism. And like, and I hate saying it this way because I don't want to sound like I'm a conservative, but it's like I got on this tangent because I'm talking about mindfulness, because I realize that I'm reading everything through this lens where everything is problematic, everything is tainted, every, you know, I can't have my attention on that all the time.
Right.
Number one, it's like because your brain needs problems that it can solve. There's got to be something like doing a puzzle or writing a song, taking a walk. There's got to be that kind of stuff that I can do
Yes.
while I'm a part of this bigger problem that may not, I may not live to see the solution of. That's one, because like that's just healthy for my brain. Another part of it is that like the thing of perspective. When you look at the world and it is only the product of colonial violence, that's not perspective.
Right, you're erasing a lot of contributions of a lot of people to look at it only through. Yeah, absolutely.
You're also erasing the things that colonialism and all the other isms and phobias can never take away.
Yes.
And maybe I'm underestimating them. Like maybe they could take them away, but they haven't yet. You know?
Right. Okay. Yes, tracking.
Like it always kind of amazes me, like when I think about what people call the Black radical tradition, which I'm not sure that people always include folks like Dr. King and the nonviolence folks in there,
Right.
even though I think technically he is. But okay, let's talk about the people that people think as more radical, like Assata Shakur. In her autobiography, she says the simplest thing, but I think about it all the time. She says, despite oppression, the world is a beautiful place. That's perspective.
Yep.
It can't be, well, there's oppression here, so we can't enjoy anything. Or we can't be that happy. We can't be too happy. We can't enjoy it too much because we have to self-flagellate. We are, after all, martyrs, right? Like that can't,
Yeah.
you know what I mean? That can't be it. Its perspective is, yes, I see the violence. Yes, I see the corruption. Yes, I see the exploitation. I also see the dolphin fins rising and falling at Redondo Beach. And that is beautiful. Right? I
Right.
also enjoy like when my kids are being silly. I don't have kids, but Tori's a
Right.
mom, so she understands. Like, and that is beautiful, you know?
Yeah.
And that's how mindfulness has helped me to be like, you know what? The idea of attention management and like elevating the good wherever I can find it, savoring the good wherever I can find it. And I used to think like this is a betrayal. Like to do that is like minimizing the problem or betraying the cause. And then I went to Robben Island in South Africa. For those who don't know, Robben Island is where the apartheid regime built a prison for political prisoners. It's where Mandela was held and others who were part of the Black consciousness movement and anti-apartheid activists. And it wasn't even the actual Robben Island part, like being in the prison, that spoke to me, although that was powerful and profound. It was the video on the way to Robben Island, because you can only get there by boat, by a ferry. And so like there's a video where they showed like the testimonies of former political prisoners at Robben Island sharing. And they said things that you might imagine Tony Robbins saying or something. But it like it hit so differently because if I'd heard Tony Robbins say it, I'd be like, well, you know, you are Tony Robbins, so I'm gonna just dismiss that. You know, like, you know, like that's how I would have thought of it. But these people who were held as political prisoners on a remote island in the Indian Ocean were saying things like, you know, how you frame your experience can determine how much you suffer. And that hits different from someone saying that who'd been held for years for fighting for Black liberation. And I'm like, oh shit, I better stop dismissing this shit because the actual revolutionaries are telling you that, like, hey, you can't frame everything like it's just colonialism. You can't frame everything like that, you know, or even so, like, yeah, like, so when they were in prison, like, they found things that are also resilience resources, right? Like, they studied together, they invested deeply, and they formed strong bonds with one another while there. You know, they traded information, they sharpened their analysis, you know, of racial capitalism while they were there. So what ends up happening is that the apartheid regime actually does what one of my mentors calls makes oppression backfire, because they send all these people to Robben Island to break their spirits. That's me quoting a former political prisoner at Robben Island. He said, "They sent us here to break our spirits." But they lost because, and I'm still quoting him, but they lost because the human spirit is like water and it always finds a way around oppression, is what they said, right? So oppression backfires because what ends up happening is you sent the most militant Black radicals to one place, and what they did was end up becoming the next rulers of the country. And a part of that, you know, is them deciding not that they're going to ignore the circumstances that brought them there, but that they're still going to enjoy playing soccer together. They're still going to enjoy each other's company. They're still going to learn from one another, you know? And so, like, that really has changed my perspective, because I feel like a lot of people who say they're interested in changing the world are just miserable. And I was one of them. I'm still recovering from being miserable. I'm not going to give myself too much credit here. I might still be kind of miserable. But the thing I've been joking around is, like, you know, that quote, like, that the artist's role is to make the revolution irresistible, from Tony Kané Bambara said that. And so I've been like, yeah, like, but how can the revolution be irresistible when the revolutionaries are so insufferable? I would love to title one of my upcoming books "The Insufferable Revolution,"
Oh my God.
and just make it a history of the Black Lives Matter or mass protest era, not just the Black Lives Matter era. But it's like what we are doing is cutting our legs out from underneath us. You know, we are adding to our own suffering here, you know, unnecessarily in so many ways. And there's one more thing I wanted to say about that, and I don't remember what it was, but that idea that we are adding to our own suffering in so many ways, which makes it harder for us to do anything about the suffering that is coming at us externally.
I mean, I love that. I think that for me, that like you, when you were talking about like the adding to your own suffering, what I'm thinking of is like that weathering piece that you talked about. Like, it sucks to say it, but it's like if there are ways in which you are weathering yourself, like you are doing the work of colonial empire for it.
Absolutely,
It
absolutely.
doesn't have to do anything because you can just internalize that shit. Again, that's like the framework that we are handed is you need to police yourself internally. You need to castigate yourself. You need to keep yourself in line. And again, it's like when you see these things repeated, when you see behaviors repeated, when you see thought patterns repeated, like our nervous systems are not terribly dissimilar from AI. If we're getting a bunch of junk in there, if we're getting a bunch of racism, if we're getting a bunch of self-hatred, whatever the thing is, like that's what's going to run unless we're fighting that programming. Your comment about having to be really intentional, and I think capitalism forces us to do this too, like empire forces you to do this too, is like fostering the goodness that you do have access to in your life. I know for me in the last year or yeah, about the last year or so, I was like, okay, I just need to like be really intentional about investing in the people in my life that I have like physical access to right now, which meant saying no to a lot of things, honestly. It's like we all kind of have 24 hours, right? Like we still have to like manage our time. I have a household to run, and so that means I have chores to do and errands and doctor's appointments and all of the things, right? But I was like, okay, I'm going to cut back on things in order to invest in people that I have known for, in some cases, multiple decades, but because of because of lots of things, but the pandemic and lockdowns made it very acute. I had not been spending time with, and I was like, okay, I'm going to be more intentional about investing time and energy into these relationships, specifically because it was like fostering. That was something that I was like, oh, I get a lot out of this, right? Even if I don't necessarily feel like it. Concerts are another thing. Like, I don't like going to concerts until I'm there. Or if I miss it, I'm like, I know I will regret this, right? So this is good for my mental health to like be in this space. I have to get over that hump of like, okay, I gotta like just grin and bear it until I get there. It'll be okay. So there's so many things that sort of contribute to like everything that you are saying, but I mean, I think that God, like the self-compassion piece is so essential, like you said, because you know, when you are running that negative script in your head, again, it's like you're just doing what the colonizer wants you to do, what the colonizer would do to you if they had the opportunity. And the self-compassion thing, or I guess the negative self-talk, like people don't actually realize that like activates your nervous system and puts you into fight or flight, right? And that was like, oh, I feel like everybody on social media figured this out like 6 months ago. I don't know what the deal was, but I was like, okay, I'm glad people know this now, that it's like if you are talking about how shitty you are, if you are giving yourself a hard time, like that activates your nervous system, and then you're going to be less productive. You're going to be less organized. You're going to get less done. Like you are going to be worse to the other people in your life. Like there are all of these, like, it's like kind of trickle down effect of hating yourself, right? That is the impact of that is so profound. And I've been trying to kind of harp on it, honestly, because I think that so many of us are doing these things and we're repeating these patterns, and it takes work to like get through that. And I want to acknowledge the fact that it is work. You're literally creating like new neural connections. That's not a thing that just like happens overnight, right? That requires practice, which is why, like, that was part of why I wanted to have you on and like to have you kind of discuss like what your practice sort of looks like. Because I think that, you know, we do sort of have this, we have this tendency to view the world through a sort of instantaneous lens, right? Of
Oh,
like,
yeah, for sure.
I can get my junk dopamine in like 1.75 seconds, right? It's like I can turn on the TV, I can open an app, like whatever the thing is. And I don't know for a fact, but I feel like there's potential there for also like that we, when we do that, when we kind of indulge that piece of thing, what doom scrolling or whatever the thing is, where it's like you're getting the dopamine hit, but it's bad for you. You know, I think that that probably contributes to what you were talking about, like your attention management. And it makes it really hard to then focus your attention on the one thing that, like, maybe I need to be doing right now, getting into a flow state, whatever that looks like. And I don't, when I'm saying like being productive, I don't mean like producing for the man. I just mean like there are things in your life that you have to do to stay alive, right?
I
And
mean,
that is also productivity.
even just the living is something
Yes.
that needs your attention. My apartment is like a sanctuary. I'll just say it like that. It,
Mm-hmm.
there are no pictures of like Dr. King's mugshot or marches or anything like that around. There are no political messages on my wall. There is a huge painting of African children laughing over my bed. There's one that says everything's gonna be all right. Like, this is my sanctuary, and to maintain it, like it requires my attention. You know what I mean? And to maintain this kind of sanctuary here, and to attend to the sense of well-being that I'm trying to create within my own body requires attention. And that's what I'm saying is, like, I want to find more like African contemplative practices, because I do think that contemplative practice is helpful here. Because if you give your attention to every thought that passes through your head, you're going to be on an emotional roller coaster. And you're in even worse condition if you believe every thought that passes through your head. So, like, part of that is being able to create some space where you can see what's going on, not judge it all, right? And not get involved with it all. So, speaking of a very practical practice about that too, is like one of the things from the Greater Good toolkit that I got was, some of these things are merging together. I think it's in the Greater Good toolkit, but is talking about your feelings in third person. And I'm a big feelings person, so like this can feel weird for people who are like big feelings people, because the thing that we hate, especially growing up in this society where it's like emotional invalidation is like the most normal thing, and you're supposed to do it to yourself.
Yeah.
It's like to feel like you're supposed to like do that to yourself, right? It's to feel like you're not supposed to take your feelings that seriously. But because like I am a big feeler, and I can be, my mood can be determined, you know, and my sense of well-being can be determined by my feelings, I guess is the best way to say it. One of the tools that I use is talking about how Andre is feeling and why in
Okay.
third person. Because when I start to narrate it in third person, it begins to create that space.
Yeah, create some distance.
It begins to, it's like, you
Okay.
know, now like I'm not the main character in this movie. I am in the theater watching it. It also helps me to be a bit more honest about what I'm feeling, but it creates this distance that is very useful for me, right? To detach a little bit. I just kept thinking of something that came up early for me in this journey, which is that, like, first off, we need to be more intentional about connecting the dots between our mental and emotional health, or our mental health, our sense of emotional well-being, and the conditions that we're living under. Like, these things are connected, and I feel like that is not a part of our common sense, you know, in our society. And a part of doing that is understanding that our feelings are political to begin with, right? Like, our feelings have political content to begin with. What we're experiencing as political content to begin with. And so when I start to do that, and that's why I said, like, when we were off the record or off the air, I don't know what the term is right now, but is that that, like, now when I read about, when I read history, especially, and I like to read about revolutions and all that, that I'm paying so much more attention to the feelings of the oppressed as I read, because in those feelings are indictments on the system that's producing those feelings, right? But beyond that is that it seems to me that oppression is first experienced as a feeling in your body. There is a sensation to it. There are bodily processes that respond to being, you know, in the position of the oppressed. And if that's the case, then it's the first site for you to experience liberation, right? It's the first battleground for liberation is your body, right? Someone else, it might have been Rick Hansen, said that, like, you have the most responsibility where you have the most power.
Okay.
And I'm
Okay.
like, we as a collective do need to take responsibility for creating a better world. But here's the deal. I can't by myself. I don't have that much power by myself to, like, what, affect a ceasefire in Gaza. I can't do that, right?
Right,
I
yeah.
can participate, and I can do my best to participate, but, like, I have way more power over how anti-Blackness is affecting me, right? How is it, what is the impact on my health? What is the impact on my relationships? Am I internalizing some of these messages and perpetuating them? You know, is it making me sick? You know, is it stressing me out? Like, I have way more power over those things in my life. And so I have a much greater responsibility to do something about the, to intervene against those forces in my personal life and in my relational life, right? And I know that I did this, and I think that I might not be the only one that may, like, have this mismatch of, like, how much responsibility we feel over things we have way less power over, and how committed we are to intervening in those areas where we have way more power.
I love that. That's great. Do you want to tell people a little bit about how this is impacting your music?
Yeah, you
How
know,
that's playing out?
I think about this in these terms often, and maybe the humor is too dark, but I also did hear, not hear, but I took a test, and it was like, in according to this test, my greatest strength is humor. I was
Okay.
surprised at that result, but I don't think that it means that I'm funny. I don't think that's what that means. But someone else told me that humor is a grit skill. So it's like,
It's why traumatized people end up becoming comedians.
exactly, right? Like, it definitely is a resilience skill, right? So basically, a couple years ago, that emergency room visit I was telling you about, like, it was very public, you know, because, like, I like put out a cry for help basically online because I was like, I don't know what to do. I'm so stressed out about living under these conditions. I tried to do something about it and just became disillusioned with even, the insufferable revolution. Then I'm in the ER and all these people rallied to keep me here, right? And so I'm like, well, whatever you get from me now, you all have to blame yourselves because I'm still here because of you. So you're gonna get these songs. You know what I mean? Like, what I'm doing with my music is I'm trying to speak to people for whom like making it to tomorrow has not always been a given, you know? And sometimes it's hard. I'm trying to speak to people who know the kind of emotional stress and despair that I know. Because what happens in this conversation so often is that mental health and social oppression, it's like there's a partition between these two things for people. I say that because when I release Make It to Tomorrow, people got excited as though I was saying something that I hadn't been saying the whole time. You're like, I tell this story about how like I knew that like my life was going to be dedicated to making the world a better place in a much more practical way than I had ever thought of it by lugging a 100-pound boulder around Los Angeles to say, this is what it feels like to live in my body. This is the burden on the Black psyche. That's literally what I said in 2016. So then, when I sing a song where the first line says, sometimes I feel suicidal, I've got to make it to tomorrow, I'm still talking about that boulder, right? But people didn't recognize it. So when I say that I'm trying to write for people who know that struggle, that's what I mean, right? And so like, when people listen to my music, you'll notice that especially since 2014, I don't produce a lot of love songs. I don't release a lot of love songs. Actually, another activist had me on their podcast a few months ago and was like, I noticed that you don't really release a lot of love songs. I'm like, yeah, no, I don't want to write about that. I have some, but I don't want to release a bunch of songs about my woes in romance or love or whatever. Like I just, no, I want to release songs about self-compassion, about gratitude, about mindfulness, about grit, about, all those things to encourage us, and to share, to share my journey. So I'm trying to think. That's actually what I'm working on right now. I'm actually working on a whole project where I take the resilient skills that I'm learning about and write a song about each one, and release them. Have we released any of those yet? No. We've not released any of them yet. Because I was just thinking, like, if I could give you an example, but I can't give you an example because at this time we haven't released any. But that's what I'm working on. And I'm hoping that, like, I can create some concert experiences where, people just get in touch with that sense of well-being that I'm talking about and leave with that sense, like a greater sense of well-being. Right. Now, this is already happening, like, you know what's funny is that like Beyoncé has been doing this like apparently on the Renaissance tour is that like her music's not necessarily about like directly about like mental health and well-being. But I saw a clip of her, I think at the end of the concert, telling everyone, I want you to take a moment and really take this in and take a deep breath. And I'm like, that is the learning resilience skill right there. Like she's teaching people how to install that feeling of or that yeah that experience that beneficial experience into their nervous system, which I when I say beneficial experience, I'm totally stealing language from Rick Hansen there, which is exactly how he talks about it. He's like, you don't have to, you can create a beneficial experience for yourself, right?
Yeah,
Inside.
absolutely. Absolutely.
It's funny because our brain already does this with negative experiences. Like how many times do you relive a bad memory, right? And when that memory comes into your head, you're having all the same bodily sensations as you were as the moment that you were in it. You're like, but we don't do it with the positive experiences. But anyway, Beyonce is helping people to do that, right? And that's what I want to do, or that's what I am doing, endeavoring to do with this music these days, is to help people to create that, those beneficial experiences, and to do them together.
I love that so much. Thank you for coming and sharing so much of your
My
experience and like your life with us. It means a lot to me. It really
pleasure.
does. Where can people find the stuff that you have released so far? Where should they go to get on the wait list for the new stuff that's coming out? All of those things.
The best place, you can hear my music streaming anywhere, YouTube, Spotify, all that kind of stuff. But the best way to know when stuff is being released is to join my email list at my website, andrehenry.co. And I also like on there's on the email list, I'll send out from time to time, I'll send out things early, unreleased stuff, exclusive stuff. And as always, just whatever I'm learning. So, right now I still do the little blurbs around social change, but I'm also incorporating more of the little blurbs around resilience as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much again for coming on. I will make sure that all of your stuff gets linked so that people don't have to go hunting for it. They can just click on it.
The many books that
Oh, yes. Yes. The
I
many, many books that you mentioned. Good point.
mentioned.
I appreciate you so much, and I'm so grateful for the work that you're doing and helping to make the world a better place. It means, like I said, it means a lot to me, and I'm sure it means a lot to hundreds or thousands of people, whoever
Likewise.
hears this. Like,
Thank you.
it definitely, it really does. I'm glad that you exist. So, thanks so much for taking the time to educate yourself with this episode. If you have thoughts, feedback, an idea for a show, you can email me at hello@toriglass.com. I have free anti-racism tools available on my website. You can just find those at toriglass.com as well. This show is only possible because of a cadre of very cool, fiercely committed patrons. If you want to support the show, get early ad-free episodes, you can sign up. It's just whitehomework.com. Other ways to show support: write a 5-star review, text this episode to a friend. Thank you so much for listening. I will see you next week. Until then, your homework is to stay woke. Bye.